Linda Turner.
And Rob Snow.
And you are?
I'm a history teacher at King James School in Knaresborough.
I'm also a history teacher, but I've got responsibilities for marvellous subjects of PSHE and citizenship as well.
Thank you. Please, can you tell me a little bit about yourselves, your home backgrounds, your parents and your own schooling?
I was born in Durham, and both my parents were born in Durham. They were upper working class and both very committed to education. And they gave me, my father particularly and my grandfather gave me a great interest in history. I went to the grammar school where expectations were really high and lessons were very, very ordinary, no visual stuff, dictation a lot of the time, but teachers instilled a sense of discipline into you and gave you a lot of knowledge and were actually quite inspirational in what they imparted, even though it was very dry. It could have been a lot better.
Do you think the methods were dry but the stories were interesting? Is that
yes,
what you're saying?
And I think the personalities as well were interesting, and they were, you know, history was a very highly regarded subject, and you were praised for doing well and you were expected to do well and you rose to the challenge.
Similar and different. Grammar school education, certainly. Chorley Grammar School. I remember doing the 11 plus and being worried about whether
yes.
I'd pass or not. But my father was a history teacher, and I went to the school that he taught at. But he never taught me at a lower school, but when I went to A-level to Runshaw College, he then taught me for A-level. My mum was a nurse, and so again, sort of like, we lived about five doors away from school, so walking to school, I just seemed very, very happy. Again, the history teaching, I don't really remember anything about sources or anything like that at school.
No.
And
if
you look at the textbooks, there's so many words to the page. If I threw that at a child today, they'd just go bananas, really, at it. But again, we enjoyed the stories and we enjoyed the work and got on with it. I think an awful lot of writing.
Yeah, I think we were very unsophisticated as well compared to today's children, but we were much more literate. Our levels of literacy were much higher. And I think we were more sensible and actually more independent in our learning, in that we could apply ourselves to things without being guided all the time.
Why do you think that was?
I think it was discipline. And I think it was expectations that you had to apply yourself to things.
And also there weren't the distractions, there weren't the computers,
there weren't
the amusing television programmes. Yeah. All the television programmes were very worthy, or tended to be quite worthy on the television.
And I wanted to go to school because that was my social life.
I remember things like, little things, history, like the Ladybird books. That was a big influence on me, and Look and Learn, a comic. Mm. You know, these are kind of things that did this. And of course, history teacher's father, we always went around castles and abbeys and everything like that. It was just ingrained, really.
Do your pupils not do those sort of things in their leisure time? Go visit castles and exhibitions?
Very few.
They stand out, those who do.
Yes.
And the real enthusiasm for some comes out.
And you ask them about places in Yorkshire, not far from here, and they don't know where they are.
And would you say your intake here at King James is relatively good in terms of socioeconomic background, or have you got a section?
I think there's a divide, really.
Yeah.
I would say there's a big divide. There are a lot of better off families, but that doesn't mean to say that they are interested in things like this. And then there's a lot of working class families who are very, really, you know, long-standing families in Knaresborough who haven't got an interest in the rest of the county, really.
Yeah.
So I'm amazed at how many sixth formers don't know where Middleham is or Massham is. That amazes me every time. Nobody's taken them there.
And I do a little thing with the year sevens where I take them all into town and give them little town quizzes, and they They find things above doorways and above pubs and make them look at roofs and lighting. And, you know, so I've never seen that. They've walked down that street all the time. And loads of little buildings, like, it pretends it's got three stories and only got two. And they're just opening their eyes a little bit. And you can see...
Looking up.
Yeah, you know, looking above the shop doorways. It's really, you know... This is a great place to teach history because it's just so much around you. Knaresborough, it's fantastic. Caves and everything, saints, brilliant.
Okay, why did each of you become a history teacher? What made you decide?
I think it was interest. I think I had an interest in it all my life, really. And I thought it was fascinating. And I think it grew as time went on. And I think there was a lot of encouragement from home and school to go to university.
Yeah, the university was the thing, the history was the thing. But when I went to university, I had no great ambition to be a teacher, like some people have this burning desire to teach. I didn't, and it was in my last year. I thought, what can I do? And I wasn't, like some
natural.
People are. They're there for the kids, and at first it was more for the subject.
Oh yes, and it was the same with
it was
me.
And you're very different now, but it was like that love of history to deliver it and communicate, whereas if you said that kind of thing at interviews nowadays, you'd get nowhere. It'd be the child first, wouldn't it? But in those days it was, it seemed quite, subject rather than child.
That's interesting. Because actually, when I've met a lot of history teachers, they're still very passionate about the subject and believe it's very important in its own right. Do you think that's still the case, that history teachers still embrace the idea of this is an important subject, I want
Absolutely.
To communicate?
Absolutely. Oh, I think our department all feel the same way.
We're so depressed at times in the way that we're losing curriculum time to other things. I don't know if that comes into a discussion, but they're just hammering it away.
We just feel that the whole system doesn't value history, and we think it's such an important subject.
And we lose battles all the time that we no longer bother trying to fight them, because it just depresses you, because you know you're going to lose them. It's a shame.
So going back to those early days, how did you learn to teach history, and how long did it take for you to feel confident in the classroom?
I had some bad training. I had Liverpool University. The course was good, but I ended up teaching a grammar school on the Wirral, and that was really poor. Really poor experience. One school, grammar school on the Wirral, boys grammar school, nice cushy number for me, but terrible training really. Just one experience of it. And Liverpool was like that, extremes of schools, really tough hard schools, and then leafy suburb schools.
And you say it was a bad training.
Oh, well, you just thought you didn't for
Too
dealing
easy.
With children. So when one of my early jobs, I had some maternity covers, and the second school again was like a grammar school, Norms Coach is fine, but the next one was like multicultural Bedford, and that really was an eye opener. That they wouldn't always sit still and quietly. They weren't always interested in what you were going to say. You went in with presumption that they'd be keen to listen to you about what the Industrial Revolution and textile looms and things like that, and they just weren't, because it wasn't relevant to them. And that was an eye-opener. And again, my first job in a local school here, my head of department was awful in some respects, in the way that very unsupportive. You just thought, you can get on with it. And so there was nothing like they do today to get children, teachers introduced to classes, good technique of working. It was very much you on your own, do your own exams, do your own marking. It wasn't a scheme of work. There were some really old tatty books and a complete mess of a stock cupboard. And there you are, this term we're doing the Saxons or something like that. And that was it, thrown in.
Was it the same for you, Linda?
Yeah, I went to... I decided to go to Leeds Carnegie College of Education because I thought it would be better.
You just go back to Carnegie College.
I went to Carnegie College thinking that it would be more useful to go to a college of education where people would really teach you how to teach, but it wasn't like that at all. And really it was useless at the college. And my first year of my first job, the head of the department just left me to it. I had no training at all. I was just thrown in at the deep end. This was in Hertfordshire, and I had to work every night during the week just to keep my head above water. I never had any help at all.
Not from the other members of the department?
There was a very small school. It was a very small school, and I think there was only me and him and a part-timer. And I had no help at all. But my second school, I went to a school in Buckinghamshire, and that head of department really taught me how to teach. And she was inspirational, and she had such a visionary. She was such a visionary. She taught local history. We used primary sources. We took them out on trips. We went into London. We had wall displays. We did team teaching in 1975 to '76. Mm. We were better than we are now in 1975 to '68. When it was all down to her, and that's what got me.
Where's she got her ideas from?
I don't know. I never asked her anything, but she was a character, and she was very disciplined. But she didn't actually need to work. They were that well off. She didn't need to work, but she was just so committed.
And was that quite a big department?
There were, I think, four teachers in that department, but it was a secondary modern in Buckinghamshire because they still had the 12 plus. And so we didn't have a sixth form, but we had 4 years in the school, and it was really well done.
So this is preparing students for CSE at the end of it?
A lot did O level, and okay. Some did CSE. Yeah, we had a good standard, even though, because the grammar schools creamed off the best, we still had good students. And actually, some of them were really clever, and they went to the grammar school and they came back to our school because they enjoyed it better. So that she inspired me to carry on, and she really made me think about resources and local history and looking for primary sources.
Do you think, because it was a secondary modern school and you were catering for a very wide range of ability, that had sort of prompted her to think about different ways of attracting students' interests and involving them?
Oh, she was wonderful. She used to take them. She always took the really naughty, horrible group, and she used to take them for trips to Aylesbury and into London. Sometimes they used to steal things, but she knew how to deal with them. You know, she was so good at trying to inspire them.
Thank you. What kind of history were you teaching at that time? What was the syllabus and the curriculum?
It was like start at the Stone Age and move forward in many ways, wasn't it? A very chronologically approach of Romans. I love the Romans. I wish I could still teach them. Yes. I like Romans, and then medieval, and just move through Tudors and Stuarts, and then you'd be up to Victorians in that year 9 Second World War.
Did you manage to cover all the way through to the present day before they started their O level?
No.
Not as thorough. I think we missed out things like the Stuarts and things. Yeah. But
we did a lot of local studies. We did the history of Amersham, and we did the history of London through the ages, and we did it kind
of.
Had
she written a scheme of work?
Yeah. Mm.
Mm-hmm. So you weren't following a chronological pattern?
We dipped in and out, but for some we kind of brought it all together.
Yeah, I'm thinking actually when I was at Cranby, we actually did a lot of the school's council stuff as well.
Yeah, and we were just starting to do that. That was good.
That was really...
That really started off you thinking about source work, didn't it?
That was really... This is interesting. Mm. This is different.
So had the head of department introduced it at Granby?
Bits of it, yes. I remember things like the Richard III, for example, the debate on that, and then the GCSE stuff, American West. Uh-huh. And I thought, wow, this is different, but dead interesting.
Uh-huh. So were you doing the Schools Council History Project GCSE O level then?
Yeah.
and the CSE as well?
Oh no, I don't remember CSEs, teaching CSEs. I'm much younger than that.
Well, actually, they didn't disappear till the mid-80s. So. But you were using it for an exam course or just as materials, the SCHP stuff?
We were just starting it when I left that school, and by the time I left education for a while, and then by the time I came back, it was GCSE. Right. So, but I did start it. I can remember doing China. I think they had a module on China, which was great.
What was the least enjoyable stuff you had to teach?
I remember coming here, actually, and doing the social economic course for GCSE, and I found that really repetitive. You know, agrarian revolution, transport revolution, industrial revolution, and then the trade unions. Now, these are subjects that do interest me. I'm quite happy going around industrial museums, but teaching it to children, I didn't think there was... Yeah, you know, they didn't always get inspired by it. I found.
But they did well at it. I think it was quite a successful O level.
Yeah, because they weren't testing that many skills. Once you taught one revolution, learnt it, that was it. You know, you could transfer the skill. You weren't doing other things, were you? You weren't learning sources.
A lot of multi choice.
Yeah.
Which other subjects had.
Yeah.
Do you think sometimes the social economic syllabus was adopted because of local links? Because obviously you're up here in Yorkshire, it was the centre of industrial revolution.
Did we do both though?
Used to do social and economic in Buckinghamshire and it was nowhere near. But we did do enclosure, and of course we related it to local enclosures in Buckinghamshire, which made it much more interesting because we had the original documents, and I think that was the secret, really.
And also the modern world syllabuses were quite hard. They really felt a lot harder, the exam, what they had to cover. You had to cover all the syllabus. And you were sort of like doing things like right up to Cuban Missile and UN in the Congo.
Oh, and my son did.
Oh, it was so hard. That group that I taught.
You had Andrew, and it was like an A-level, wasn't it?
It was China. It was...
Russia.
Cuban Missile
Five
course,
pieces of coursework.
And it was so rigorous.
Yeah.
And the brightest kids, and we worked so hard.
But
and
they responded
nice.
Well, though.
They did work very hard to the challenge.
Well, yeah.
What, in your view, really switches children on in history to learning? What is it that really captures their attention?
I think make it relevant to them. I think the stories still get to them. You know, the horrible bit of it. You know, the Tony Robinson bits of horrible history. And you know, sometimes when they relate it to children, their experiences and the contrast between the two, I think that's one thing. And again, engaging them in activities as well, making them be creative. And that's the thing that really annoys me. When we had more curriculum time, we could have such fun and be so creative with them, whereas nowadays with shrinking time, it's so much harder to do the fun.
How much time do you have now compared with then?
Well, in the past, say they'd have across 7, 8, 9, they'd have 5 sessions with history. So they have one, say perhaps one in year 7, 2 in year 8, 2 in year 9. That's the old experience.
That's an hour.
You know, perhaps
an hour and 10 minutes.
Now they get 3 hours of humanities a week in year 7, of which the history element we boost up, don't we? But then an hour each in 8 and 9, so they only got an hour each. And we've got so much we want to teach them and so little time. It's very frustrating.
What about you, Linda? What did you think really switches the children off?
I think the same, that it's making connections to their world and relating to them and giving them a role to play in it and listening to them, having their contributions. But also I think it's making them more aware of the world around them. But they like the personal touch. You know, if you live in a small community, the personal touch is very important, but I think you have to let them participate and value their contributions. The thing that I think you build that up with them.
For some reason, they always seem to love the American Indians, the Native Americans. Mm. You know, we do that with them, which is completely different. And I think they like them. And it's not a generation of cowboy film watchers like we were.
No.
You know, it's
totally
very new to
them,
which I thought, when I first taught it, they were aware of it, but nowadays it's completely alien. You know, they just don't watch the cowboy films.
Why do you think they like it, even though it's completely alien?
I don't know.
It's just another way of looking at life, I think, isn't it? It's
different values, you know. Why are you allowed so many wives? Why do they abandon children?
Yeah.
There are lots
They're
of issues there
in
the practice. Are they savages?
The nearest you get to anthropology, isn't it?
Yeah.
In history, history course.
Mm. Yeah, and so we boosted up. We say, we've got to have a big element in humanities because it covers all the religion and all the geography and things. And so it's not just pure history, but we do emphasise the uses of sources and things like that, and change and continuity. And again, it's making the links about why do we do that? Why do they do that?
How have your ideas, both of your ideas about how to teach history, developed over time? Because you said you were thrown in the deep end at the start. So how have your ideas developed?
Well, I think it was the teacher who did most of the work at one time, and the children listened. Whereas now you try to involve them and develop activities where they are creative. And
So what examples could you give of involving the pupils and enabling them to be creative that you use today?
Just trying to think, like, we're doing like causes of war, First World War, like making a radio programme about Sarajevo, to say what's happened and what were the consequences.
Or a role play about young men going to war and what's influenced them.
And like I'm doing your Versailles Treaty at the moment, and I'm trying to think, right, you're the American delegation, you're the British delegation, you're the French delegation, come up with some ideas about what you want and why. And so we're trying to work a bit in groups that way. And I think I'm trying to do more active lessons, like, reactions to Versailles. There's a hat, you're the Frenchman, you're the bearer, you're a bowler hat, you're the cowboy hat for America. What do you think about war guilt? Stand on the line in that position. Mm. Why have you moved from there to that over submarines or something like that? Why submarine? That's
making
it more. Because, some of the ideas of being a bit more, kinesthetic and that of things. I think you need to vary the lessons a lot more, which I don't think happened in the past.
No, it was more teacher-led.
The most fun lesson I remember having was I went out the quad and we went a trip round Rome, and we had like chariot races on hobby horses round there, and then they went to the market and then they did gladiators and they had such fun. And I couldn't do that nowadays, I don't think.
Why couldn't you do it now?
Because of time for preparing it. Yeah. Also, you had other people looking out the windows and what's going on and having a laugh. Whereas nowadays, you would ruin, disturbing my lesson, everything like that. No,
of children as well that, you can't do things.
You can't take some risk with some of them nowadays.
Yeah, because they just take advantage and it ends up in trouble.
I can understand the time thing, because you would have to give them lots of preparation to understand those roles, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and it is more and more the time thing. I've got so many ideas and so many things I want to do, and I can't. We had the Arkwright song competition. Let's make a song to praise Arkwright. And I set it as a homework, but I don't do the follow up. Let's sing a song about Arkwright, which I used to do.
Yeah.
I've got got loads of things of writing poems, writing, producing books and things, but it's like, you've only got so many time to get from A to B.
Those sort of ideas about being creative, have you just developed them yourself, or you picked them up from colleagues you've networked with, or you've training courses, or you've read them in teaching history or something like that?
Well, I think, Rob, I think you do think a lot about things like that, don't you? You are good at things like that. He does quizzes and things, and he's got that kind of mind. I think of some things, but I'm not as good as you are at doing them. But I think we're very different in the way we approach.
But you haven't got ideas from outside?
Oh, yes. I mean, I got just an essence, and I'm rewriting year 9 for Frunter, and I'm looking at things on Teachers TV, and I got an idea about doing the documentary, you know, and getting the videos and everything. And so, we do read magazines. And
the school's very much for teaching and learning about new ideas for how to do interesting plenaries and things like that.
Yeah.
And, I come up with some nice ideas as well. Like, did my golden envelope. Have you heard of that? This is an easy one for requiring. You don't have to have much brain power, and you can have not the brightest kids winning. Just say a word at a lesson. You've got it written down in an envelope with a prize.
Yeah.
And they've got to choose a word from the lesson. And if it matches up with the word in the box, they win the prize as well. And therefore, you know, they don't have to be brainy to win the prize. And you just have to say, what word have you chosen and why? And they win it. And
it means they all listen to the word.
Yes.
Yeah. And so
bribery,
it's bribery. But wow, this, you know, I did it today. Oh, this is good. I'm going to enjoy history because of that. And it's such a, but you know, we're doing our League of Nations. What? So you've got to learn the terms of League of Nations. So it could be Saarland, it could be Anschluss, it could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
But it was demilitarisation of the Rhineland, and someone had come up with that.
And who won it?
A nice, not a very bright one, but
good.
Ben won it, and he'd just chosen a word. That's the kind of thing you just want to do. But you know, it's a forcing nowadays, a three-part lesson. You must do a plenary. Mm-hmm. You must do this. You must have your objects on the board. Da 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 da. And so we are obeying orders.
We are.
Just going to take you back now. And you both taught in the 80s, which was a time before the national curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to ask you at that time if you can remember. What were the main sort of influences coming in?
When I was at Granby, the school's council was important. You know, there were some... It's a bit vague. We didn't teach all the courses all the way through. But, you know, I do remember that as an influence. And certainly the source-based work was very, very important.
And coursework was coming in a lot.
Because I do not remember from my grammar school education doing lots of sources at all. I just don't remember it. And so sources and looking at the sources are very, very important.
Did you feel it was easy to catch on to what school's history project was about? Because obviously you say it's very unfamiliar ground to be teaching using sources. Was it difficult to pick up what it was about, what you were supposed to do?
Yeah, I don't think, I'm not sure necessarily. I taught, you know, for the exam papers as well. I'm not sure. I was just one step ahead of the kids at times about, you know, today the feedback from exam papers is very good. And in those days it wasn't. You know, I'm not sure I always gave the best advice about how to tackle questions, for example, when in retrospect, because of lack of training, I think, in my respect.
I was going to say, was there training and networking to support you?
No, I don't remember things like that massively. I really don't. Head of department would have gone, he wasn't a great feedbacker of information, and that made it quite difficult.
So it sort of makes sense of it yourself?
Yeah.
From the books?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember coursework coming in and how you felt about having to do coursework for the first time?
I think it must have been late 80s, wasn't it, when it really came in. And I didn't mind doing the coursework. It was just the volume of it. We did quite a lot. And we all had to mark it. And that was unpaid work, really. And it took a long time because we had to mark the whole year group if you did one. We still have done it this year, you know, and it all takes time.
Isn't it?
And that was really part of GCSE, I suppose.
Yes.
So were you in favour of GCSE? Was it something that you felt was a good thing?
I took it on board.
It's a smooth transition. I don't know. I, I can't remember really.
You weren't fazed by it?
No, I just took it on board, yeah.
I wanted to ask you whether you think subsequent, since then, the emphasis on sources and skills has diminished in your teaching, or whether it's just as important today.
I think it's just as important.
I think so. When I look at the books are excellent nowadays. You know, those medieval minds, the Christian Council books. I think they're super.
But every book we use, really, from year 7 to 13, yeah, is sources based.
And the visual stuff is fantastic now. Mm. It's really good. Yeah, I suppose you have to, whether it's, you know, they're not as good because they're not reading as much in any books, or whether we're just catering for a less literate audience, I don't know, but the books are super now.
You use a lot of video and I
like doing my fine images and the PowerPoints, and I like that strong image up on the board. You know, whether it's a cartoon or whatever, I do spend a lot of time trying to find these visual sources to help me structure my lessons.
And it is great to have a great big board where everybody can see.
How do you use the electronic whiteboard?
I just use it for sources, really, and structure of lessons. We need more training.
I'd love to be able to use it as interactively as other people do, but it's not in my... I'm not great at IT, and so although we've been trained once, like the French department are superb at it. They're really trained up and got on board, and I don't use the interactive nature of it as fully as I should do.
Mm. Do you think an element of age?
Yeah.
So if you were a younger teacher, it's something you would take on board?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Actually, I think it was Linda, you've mentioned quite a lot of aids to learning in the survey.
Have I?
Yes. I mean, in your early years, you've mentioned banders and radio, film strips, TV programmes. Do you want to talk a bit about how you used to use those?
We used to use banders all the time because we couldn't photocopy anything and we didn't have any books. But we used to do quite creative things on the banders didn't we? But we used to, my table at home was always covered in pink, green.
One group I had, they'd work so hard and they'd get through bander sheets like bander sheets. And one day, for the last lesson, I brought them in and they all had a lucky go on the bander. So I turned the bander around. I just had such a nice little session just doing the lucky bander. I think Pete buried the bander as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
He just buried it.
Carol Waltons, who's our deputy head, she was head of science then, and I used to be in there at 7:45 on the bander every morning. And you know, all the fumes used to come out, and you were quite high by the time you left the room.
I show one to the sixth form, and they come across this very colourful ATGA, and they thought, wow, what's all this? It's got green and blue and purple. Oh, it's very expensive. An ancient source on Henry VII's.
But we couldn't have done without it, really, could we? We needed
it. It was us doing all the work.
It was us doing all the
preparation for letters and writing it all out.
Diagrams.
I've still got covers full of bander things, essays. I haven't quite chucked away from my A level mainly.
Did you use film strips and TV much?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Used to use a lot of film strips. But that's a long time ago.
I know the First World War, we had some photographs in the Imperial War Museum.
I still use them.
And they're really good.
I still use them. And actually, I've just written about them today because I want to try and put them onto the system.
Yeah.
Because they're excellent. And I do think that we have a lot of old television programmes which are no good now, but they're actually much better quality than some of the things
we love now. Like they go around the castle and they're actually showing things.
It's so good, and you can't get them anymore.
They have all this, what we call the Melanie programmes, interactive, and there's information overload. The kids don't know where they're looking, what they're supposed to do, and although it must look the history is very good. It's great for me because I can follow it, but the kids just get lost because they just zip around all the time. They don't know what the chronology or sense of anything.
But some of those old television programmes were excellent at covering a topic well. I mean, the castle one is fantastic, isn't it? The medieval town.
And even
but
Arkwright.
They're ancient now, and Arkwright, but they're ancient, and it just doesn't appeal to the kids today.
Why do you think that is?
It's not colourful, it's the pace. Yeah.
There was more information in them, but less visual impact. That's interesting. And today you've put books, DVDs, PowerPoints. You use DVDs, what, clips, things like that, or is it whole programmes? Films?
I use BBC a lot, Learning Zone, Clip Bank, Teachers TV. But we take clips off old videos, don't we, and things, you know, cut them down.
I don't show them as long, you know, whereas in the past I might show a whole programme. Nowadays it's more 10-15 minutes of it. You know, whereas they'd be happy, almost content to watch it for 25 minutes or half
the whole
an hour
idea is to get them working, isn't it? Get them active.
But involved. That's an introduction. You work at it.
Okay. Just wanted to move on to talk about the national curriculum. Obviously, it's had a big impact on history teaching. I mean, did you feel that at the time when it came in, this is a big change?
Again, I thought it was trying to cram too much in.
Yes.
You know, there's too many themes. Like, we had to introduce a French Revolution theme.
Yeah.
For the modern
European. And a lot of
British
history.
And the emphasis on British history. And things went as well at the time. It made a bit of a treadmill. You've got to cover it, was the expectation. Then after a few years, you just chop it down to what you wanted, and no one seemed to mind what you were teaching anyway, so it wasn't a great change, I think they thought it was.
Yes, but it was awful to begin with, wasn't it? Because can you remember doing your levels when we had levels within levels?
Well, that was...
We spent hours marking a piece of work, and it was... We took it too seriously.
Yeah, you tried to make a system
work
that was not very good. And these levels are so vague. It's not a math subject, you know, where you can just measure something like that. It's just the vague phrases between the different groups. They're still the same, aren't they?
And I still think we didn't have enough training on those kind of things, did we? We've never had enough training.
Do you feel happier with it now, though? Because it's loosened up, it's more flexible.
Yes, I feel much happier with it now. But the levels, I still think this levelling is still variable, don't you?
Yeah.
And how people interpret the levels.
Yeah.
Even within our department, we've got vast differences, haven't we? How you interpret the words in the levels. And I'm not quite sure that it's absolutely right.
What do you think ought to be done about it?
Well, who are we to say? We just get told. I really think that they make all this... I mean, in this school, we have all this fuss about levels up to year 11. And it's just forgotten about.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, not mentioned again.
Is that because they're in A level and you've got AS and A2 and they're going to be assessed?
Yes, but you know, it's all, well, where's that gone to? What difference? You know, we've got to this point, it's just GCSE, and then it doesn't seem to be.
And a lot of it, you know, knowing stuff nowadays, it seems to be such not important. It's the skills, all, you know, the transferable PELTs and things like that. And a bit of knowledge doesn't seem to matter at all. Yeah, they could look it up or they can find out, but that's the argument they seem to be put on to us.
Is that a recent thing, really recent, that idea that knowledge in itself isn't important?
I think that's three or four years. We've had that expressed by senior members of staff, really, that, you know, the knowledge...
I've heard the headmaster talk to prospective Year 7 parents that virtue saying that it's not the knowledge, it's the skills.
You don't need to know how a volcano works, but you do need to know something, to be able to talk.
I didn't agree at all, I was saying.
The idea that you can just research and look it up, I think, I know so much. It does help me understand the world.
You have to understand it so much. You have to understand it to be able to analyse it.
About places and geography than a lot of the geographers. Just, they don't seem clueless about the world and places.
Mm-hmm.
And they seem quite content that they can look it up in an atlas if required. There we are.
But they don't win pub quizzes, do they,
no,
Rob?
No.
So do you think in your lessons that learning knowledge figures more than acquiring skills?
I think you can do both. I really think you can do both. And I think
they're both very important.
Yeah. You know.
And I think if you've just got the skills and not the knowledge, well, it's quite empty.
Today, I said, you're going to have to learn the Treaty of Versailles.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you can do these GCSE questions unless you know the answer to, say, what happened to Germany's armed forces. If you haven't got a clue, and I gave an example, I spoke for a minute about it, and I said, this is a zero mark answer because it's just no specific facts. And I spoke for a minute saying, oh, their army was smaller, or it was badly affected. I just gave it all these vague, bland statements. And I've spoken for a minute about it. In an exam, you get no marks because you've got no specific knowledge. You need to learn it. And they found it quite unusual that they'd have to learn a list of facts like how many men were in the army,
mm-hmm.
and how, the actual, you need to know the battleships and submarines, and learning that.
Yeah, but even so, I mean, they do have to do that, but even so, in the GCSE, there has been a dumbing down of knowledge, hasn't there? Definitely.
Yeah.
You don't need to know as much as you used to know, need to know.
But you wouldn't want to return to the days that you had.
No. I do think, that knowledge is important for life, as well as building up the skill to use the knowledge.
You're both involved in sixth form teaching.
Yep.
Yeah. So at A-level history, do you think that has acquired some of the trends from GCSE and lower school?
They had a system that worked. And recently, the recent changes are appalling. They have to use sources at A level. It's just completely
gone back to the
out.
Old essay.
And it's, it just breaks your heart. You know, the way that, you got a good system, they used to have three sources on Henry VII and a question that requires them to use a source and tie a bit of source analysis. Now, no need, it's just essay. And you work them so hard, and then they can pick a question that really tricks them as well. And you just think, it's not fair.
It's appalling. It's absolutely appalling.
I've been told that the AS level had been rather dumbed down, that it didn't require them to do essays. Is that not the case on the syllabus you're doing?
Well, it is dumbed down, but it's 1.5 hours and 2 questions. We're not just teaching them to pass an exam. We want them to go on and do well at A2 and perhaps go on to study. We're not just doing it to pass an exam.
Yeah.
And so we do try to develop the skills. But when we look at the examiner's questions and the answers, we think, we could do far better than this.
And the textbooks as well.
Very worried about the examining system. I think it's awful. We never know. I cannot say what my kids are going to get because you don't know who's marking it. And I think it's very questionable, the standard of examining.
So which board do you do?
AQA.
AQA.
AQA. We do British history. Henry VII in AS and Edward, Mary, Elizabeth. Next year.
Mm-hmm. And A2.
A2. And it's even worse on the European side because they don't do a European topic as such. They have a skill for
They've cut out the European paper.
They just do a personal study.
Now, though, we used to do a British paper, a European paper, and a personal study, and that was hard because we did the personal study in our own time with the students. They've cut the European paper out completely.
So on the personal studies, they could do source work, can they? Or do they not?
They will use sources.
You know, looking at different secondary sources for a start, how they change over time.
Probably primary.
And so they will do it there. But, you know,
but it won't be kind of, it's an essay, really. It's not just, you know.
So essentially, they're just doing the Tudors.
Yeah.
So that's much narrower than in the past.
And the AS has been, I mean, we've always complained about 1.5 hours. There's no continuity in education because it's all about thinking skills, isn't it, Nat? You know, and then at A level, which is surely the most important time for thinking skills, they don't have any time to think. The AS is 1.25 hours to do 2 questions, and the A2 is 1.5 hours.
Do you
think thinking skills at all. They have no time.
Too short.
Too short. Terrible. Mm. I would struggle myself.
Well, when
to do
you know,
that.
Certainly if you know a lot, just doing a 37.5 minutes.
It's kind of penalising the people who really understand it all and can really put a really good argument forward. It's penalising them.
Now, just move on to a different topic. I just wanted to ask you whether you thought it was important for history in school to promote a sense of national identity, and particularly whether you thought there was sufficient British history in the national curriculum.
I don't feel there's time enough to do this like there used to be. And, you know, some of the things that I feel has been cut. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't teach as much down the lower schools as I used to do, but certainly the idea, you know, the British heroes or British Empire, we hardly touch on, do we?
We don't have enough time. 1 hour a week.
And, you know, really don't.
So do you feel that there ought to be a role for history in developing a sense of national identity?
Definitely, yeah. Definitely. And you said that the slave trade is mandatory now.
Yeah, it has been for a bit.
Yeah.
Well, we don't get onto the slave trade very often.
You don't do it in...
We have to, we try. We try, but we...
The Holocaust and slave trade.
We always do the Holocaust, but the slave trade, sometimes the way the schools run, we don't get onto it. And we'd love to do it. We do it well.
Yeah. How long do you spend on the Holocaust?
Quite a while.
A week?
Yeah.
Quite a while.
Too long, I think, because other subjects do it as well.
Yeah.
And so I disagree the way that we
it
set up
wrong.
Too long.
Mm.
How long is too long?
Well, we did 2 learning cycles
on
it this
year.
Well, I didn't
teach it this year. I was out.
So we were, I think, you know, we spent quite about six or eight weeks on it.
Which is a lot. 40 weeks a year.
It's a lot.
But do you think it's there because history should have this moral dimension about teaching tolerance and lessons from the past?
Yeah, but then you've also got in PSHE citizenship, we're sort of introducing these ideas, and RE does it. Mm. And so, you know, the same theme is being hammered home, whereas they're not doing some of the other dimensions about 20th century issues that we used to perhaps cover in more depth.
Mm-hmm. However, it's important to do the Holocaust from a historical perspective because it's not always treated that way, is it, in school?
Do you find it difficult then if they've been doing it in other subjects when you come to do it in history because they've already met it before? I mean, there's no novelty then, is there? Or
sometimes, yes, you know, you realise that they've done things, but they've never done things well. They've never done things... Historically, it's been glossed over.
They might know
really.
All of Schindler's List, the programme.
Yeah, they might know Schindler's List, the programme, but they don't know the historical background, do
Yes, and I've watched the video, but not.
Generally speaking, you've been sort of quite pessimistic about history in your school at the moment. Do you feel it's well regarded by the children?
Definitely.
Yes.
Do you have, you know, feedback sessions from
them?
Well,
it's on Kirkland Rowland survey where they've asked pupils, we're second in popularity with the kids. With
after drama, after art,
I think it is.
All right.
Feedback of the choice subjects we're top of the pops in.
We're doing too well.
Yeah, they don't like us in many. They don't. Senior staff, I don't think like us having too many classes.
No.
Who do you compete with? Geography.
Geography, PE, drama, IT, art, photography. All the choices, massive. They got too much choice in some ways.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're still regarded as a harder subject, but they're still reasonably popular within the school, aren't we? You know, and, you know, look at this
year. Very popular.
And A level as well.
So, how many GCSE groups do you have?
Well, I've just done a 1 year GCSE this year, which was very hard.
And who was
in
that
year 10?
In year 10, is that for just the most able students?
No, they didn't choose the most able. That's what was ridiculous about
it. What was the point of doing that?
Oh, do you not understand this? We're on the crystal.
Can you explain it, Rob?
They're trying to give them more opportunities to do
more
subjects and take maths earlier. And not a problem, but it's just the kids that they're not really structuring it for the children. I think bright kids can do it in a year.
Mm.
Less able ones need the 2 years. And dear me.
So how many hours a week for the 1 year course?
Well, we share it. I do 2 hours all in one go. On an afternoon, and the head of department.
I've just been teaching my first year 11. They're a nicest group, but you know, for 2 hours in the afternoon, Thursday afternoon, and if they're all away on holiday next week, and you think, oh, you're going to miss all of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you know, you might
very demanding of the teacher and of them really, because especially in year 10, because they're not really mature enough, I think, and you just find by the end of year 10. They really get into grips with it, which is just as well, but that happens anyway over a 2 year period, you know.
I just want to ask you about your school report, because you both sent your school reports to us. And you said, Rob, that your report, which was done when you were being the equivalent of year seven, you'd used it with your year sevens to teach them about schooling. And I thought I'd ask you, what did the year sevens say about the report?
They're just fascinated with it. You know, they just the ideas of positions.
Yes.
The exam. The
list
idea
on the wall.
Of exam marks, and you're tested for your homeworks, and the importance of tidy handwriting, and the subjects you were doing, and the fact that I didn't do needlework because I was a boy. Oh, there's loads. They loved it. They actually have a really fun session. Talking about what schools were like, and there is, it's a whole lesson take up just looking at how can we use this as a source to find out about education. And again, it gives me a chance to tell stories about what teachers were like, and you know, good things. And I have a lovely lesson doing it. I really enjoy teaching it, and they come up with some super questions as well about it.
Do any of them suggest they might have preferred your type of education?
Well, they don't like the idea of, most of them do not like the idea of positions and the idea of grammar schools and 11 pluses. Most, you know, I think that I might get my vibe from that you know, they don't feel that they'd like that atmosphere and the sexist. And the idea, I don't think most of them do. You know, I think they're quite happy with the way they work today and the idea of doing lots of writing and essays and being tested. The end of year test, it used to worry you, the end of year test in 7, 8, 9, 10, you had a big test at the end of the year to show your knowledge, how much you'd learned. You used to work at it.
Finally, if both of you could choose any historical topic to teach, what would it be and to what age group?
Well, I like doing the Holocaust, I must admit, and I like doing Anne Frank's diary and Schindler and heroes of the Holocaust. But really, I like all German history, though, right through the 20th century. Mm. I'm interested in it.
And what year would you be teaching that to?
Year 9.
I like the Year 9 First World War. I really like the trenches and everyone, conscription and the idea of what when people went through and linking it to their parents, their backgrounds, everything like that. Their grandparents and great-grandparents now, isn't it?
And
I love that. I like the military stuff as well.
Thank you to both of you. Thank you very much.